session number 30620. Mr. Kurt Seldes.
Let me quickly have a look.
The other thing, did you encounter at any time any anti-Semitism?
Oh, there's something, I don't know if you want to put it on there.
Can you just answer the question? Did you encounter any time in the British Army any anti-Semitism?
No.
Not
definitely
at all.
Not at all.
Not from any NCOs or people?
Not from any NCOs or nothing.
Now, you say...
There may be the occasional thing where somebody, oh, you're still a bloody German. But that was it. But it was never anything to do with religion or anything like that. Remember that when I was interned in Onken, they put out, and I was on the list, to be sent to not to Canada, to be sent away, to be put on a ship. And I was rather aghast. And there was a gentleman there who knew my mother and my father, who was a doctor, who was also interned, by the way. And I told him that I don't want to be shipped away. I've got my mother and father here. So he said, Kurt, don't worry. We'll do something. What are we going to do? He said, well, come tonight to my camp. And he got hold of a Bent. He was a doctor. Although actually not petitioning, but an author internee. But he managed to get hold of a bandage. He put it into cement, you know, and he put it all around my leg, right up to the waist. And next day, two of the internees, together with him, took me to the camp doctor. And said to the camp doctor, Kurt here has just broken his leg last night. I'm a doctor here. I put him into temporary bandage, but you can't send him away abroad. So the doctor looked at the bandage, which was already dried up and this and the other, and he knocked at it, and he said, are you comfortable? He said, I said, yes. So he said, okay. So he struck me off on the list of being sent away.
Now, how did you what happened? How did your army service come to an end? Because you seem to be finished in 43.
Yes.
What happened? Why did you finish then?
Well, actually, it's a little bit. I developed something like an anxiety of some sort, and I started peeing a lot. So they took me to the doctor, this and the other, I was put into hospital, then I was put back into camp, and then one of the doctors says that they would discharge me. So I was discharged, don't know what they call it, fulfilling army physical requirements or something like that?
Not fulfilling,
yeah. Or not fulfilling army physical requirements.
Do you now understand what was wrong here? Or
not
did you
really.
Never really know what...
Not really.
So what did
I just
you do
left it like that.
What did you do when you came out of the army?
Well, I still suffered with it for quite a long time. Eventually, I was told that it was an anxiety feeling. I think I still went to some sort of treatment with the doctors who gave me all sorts of sleeping pills and all sorts of things of a night. And I know I had the bedpan and all that sort of thing at night. That was more or less it, as far as I remember.
Did it take long to recover?
I think so. I think it was quite a while. I think it, if I call it like this, it could have been 6 months or so. Eventually it seized up.
And that would be about 44.
Yes.
Now, what
yes.
were you doing? Were you living back in Kilburn? Where were you living?
When I came back, when I came out of the army, my parents were released from the army. I would say, again, call me
from
a liar, from internment camp. My parents were released when I was in the army. I could make an application, and my parents were released over my sister. They then took, I know that then they didn't go back to where we were before, because that was all gone. And we lived in Mapesbury Court, Shoot Up Hill, where my parents took a small apartment.
So this is back in Kilburn?
In Kilburn. My father got the job at the cleaners. My sister worked at John Lyon's corner house, where she became friendly with the manager there. I don't know if I should put all that down. Who then gave my father £100 loan to open a shop in Kilburn as Kilburn Dyers and Cleaners, which was in Kilburn High Road, which was a shop for taking on cleaning stuff. He got hold of a second-hand, machine, you know, and I know my father always got up at 4:30 in the morning doing the pressing. My sister went to the firm where he learned how to use the cleaning equipment or used cleaning. And the stuff which he took in the shop, handed over to that firm. We picked it up by a second-hand van. And my father and my sister worked there in the shop to do Kilburn Dyers and Cleaners Limited in Kilburn High Road.
Now, were you were working in the...
Now, I was then working... That's how I started work then at the Czech restaurant. That's how...
When you were doing the utility meals.
Correct.
How long did you carry on there?
I know I worked there for, I don't know, maybe 6 months or so. Then I got the job in the hotel in Piccadilly. I worked there
as a hotel restaurant manager.
And then one day I met an ex-army friend of mine.
Now, was the war still going on then? Not sure.
Could have been already over. Because I remember, I met him and I said, "What are you doing?" I told him that I was doing in the catering business. He said he was doing for that button firm. Oh, the war was still on or at the very last stages, because the bombs were still going in London, and he said, "We want to move out with the firm." And what we do, you remember, there were these covered buttons they used to do, cloth-covered buttons. They're looking for somebody to open up a little, call it factory, to employ 4 or 5 girls to do the covered buttons. They would supply the machinery. I got to go out and get the work. And they pay me a basic salary and a commission. And I was very happy to take on that job. So I moved to Manchester. What's the outskirts of Manchester?
Doesn't matter.
Somewhere like that.
Do you remember the end of the war? What about the bombing first? Was the bombing bad in the...
The bombing was quite bad, because I remember now, coming to think of it, my parents, who lived in Shoot Up Hill, they had a bomb maybe 4 hours further. That was one morning they woke up and there was nothing, which was between Kilburn Station and Shoot Up Hill where they were. They woke up one morning and it was completely flat. There was nothing there except the hubble of what's that? I still remember some of the bombing, but as I said, nothing to any. The sirens went, we all run, looked for shelter, either we went down in the cellar somewhere, and then we stood there until the sirens went and came up again.
Do you remember
nothing really exciting actually happened from my point.
VE Day?
Sorry?
VE Day, the end of the war. Do you remember that? Was there any special celebration?
Yes and no. I must be lying. Yes, when World War God, everybody celebrated. We went in the street. We went completely mad, throwing things about this and the other. But then things calmed down fairly quickly, actually.
Now, when were you... We've just come to the end now, really. When were you naturalized, or were you? I presume you were naturalized as British.
I was naturalized already during the war.
Now, tell me about that.
We were told that we could naturalize. I can't remember if we had to fill out papers and this and the other. And then all I remember that we were naturalized. I cannot remember having received naturalized paper. I don't know where they were. Oh, yes. It must have been because I must have been naturalized before the end of the war because we put all our papers, including my birth certificates, my parents' marriage certificates, all our papers, including that, we put in a trunk, and we put it into a storage. And one night, that storage place got a direct hit, and everything went. And all I remember, my parents said, we don't have even a sheet of clothing to change. And all our papers were lost. And that was in one of those, you know, you put them into what they call these officers' storage place, and that got a direct hit.
Now, what, after the war, what was your career in? What would you say your career was?
Now, as I said, I was a waiter. Then there was a button firm. That eventually, that must have been after the war, because I remember I got an old jalopy. I invited my parents to come to Blackpool to show them the tower. I broke down. I didn't have enough money to pay for the repair. I had to give my watch to the garage.
But what did you eventually settle into? What was your, you know, if you, you know, that's made your money and career?
Right. Now, having done that, let me think. I met my wife. Still in employment, I still was working as a waiter. You know, I started manufacturing toiletry articles for Woolworths, manufacturing sponge bags, which I managed to get hold of offcuts from coat manufacturer, you know, raincoat manufacturers, which had, you know, the big armhole which you cut out. I folded them up and I made the sponge bag. I got my first order for 24 from Selfridges. I then thought, let's go a little bit further. So I made an appointment with Woolworths head office in Marylebone Street, which was head office of Woolworths, which I think it still is. I saw the buyer, who said, wait outside, I give you an order. And when I saw the order for 12 dozen, I nearly jumped to the ceiling, because I've never seen an order like that. I did that more or less with friends of mine, did some work. My girlfriend did some of the work, and we delivered it, packaged it. Eventually, I found premises in...
Doesn't matter, honestly.
You know where they built the flyover? I premises, I did that. They threw me out of these premises because they needed to build a flyover. They then offered me premises in Ireland and Scotland, all over, but eventually settled for premises in Stevenage, which was a new town. And I was one of the first occupiers of a little factory in Stevenage, where I carried on work for Woolworths with toiletry goods, sponge bags. We also made Ken skirts, which at that time suddenly became fashionable with the frills and this and the other. Until a friend of mine who was in the gown business or in the blouse business said, "Bobby, give up your factory. I found another position for you." And I said, "What is that?" And I said, "Selling pressing equipment." So I said, "I got no idea about that. How come?" He said, "I've been to the Ideal Home Exhibition, and I've seen a German company displaying a machine which looks a glorified ironing board, but has underneath the board a motor which operates through a kicker plate on the floor. So when you put your garment on it and you start pressing, you start pushing your kicker plate, and that operates a suction. And by using the iron, instead of going forward and backward four or five times, once will do and it's pressed. So you can press a pair of trousers or a pair of jeans, a blouse, a skirt. Instead of 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes, you can probably press it in 30 seconds. And the time saving is so enormously that it will be a great success." So I said, "But I don't want to work for a German company." So he said, "It's no time to be superstitious. You phone up, they haven't got an agent in England." So I was persuaded and eventually got to the phone to Germany, phoned them up, and they said, "Oh, Mr. Zeldes, I'm so pleased that you speak German. Funny enough, two of our directors are coming to London tomorrow morning. They will be in Heathrow at 8:20. Would you like to be there and meet them?" I took on they offered me the agent.
What did you actually do?
Well, what I did was I went to Germany to learn the trade. They trained me like a little apprentice. I had to learn from beginning to end. Then they gave me, or they lent me, a van with all the equipment inside, so that instead of sending out leaflets to sell, I went to the factories and I demonstrated with a long electric lead going into whatever factory they had or water supply. I demonstrated in the van the equipment, and I was introduced to Marks & Spencer. I met Mr. Thief, who said, would I bring one of these machines to Baker Street and demonstrate it there? They immediately gave me an order for three and said, don't go anywhere, we will now send you.
Was this your career? I mean, is that
yes,
what you did?
Yes, that was my career.
So for 30 or 40 years you were selling trouser presses?
Yes. I then started a factory in Normanton, employed roughly about 30 people, eventually manufactured most of this himself, and imported and manufactured other stuff. And the final of my career was that Taylor Woodrow, which is the building company, approached me and said, we got a contract from Russia to build three factories in Russia. We have to build the factories, but they need a company to train Russian people to use the equipment, manufacture, and show how it's been done.
Trouser presses.
Pressing, everything about sewing. Anything pressing and finishing. So I said, not pressing, finishing is also a part of the process. And we sent 12 people over to Russia, and we trained Russian people in three different factories to build up Russian manufacturing business.
Now, how was it? Have you ever visited? I mean, you were trained in. Well, how did you find it when you went back to Germany to visit? I mean, you were, you know.
How did I find it? I accepted it like everybody else in the world. It's a new world, a new country. I was very nicely received. Shall we say, partly because I helped the German company to develop a new industry in a foreign country. And I was very happy to have found a company or people who built up something with me, and I made money.
But you didn't. You were never tempted to move back to Germany?
No, I would never have moved
back.
Why
not?
I would say there was a deep inner feeling that Germany once threw me out, and that was it. And I would say that up to a point, I saw in every second German, if not in every German, somebody who hated Jews or wanted Jews out of the country. But these people were actually, not a minute, they were Christian. I'm just trying to think they were, what were they? They had Christian religion. I'm just trying to think of something else. They went to church every weekend. But they never transferred me or tried me to change me. They always said, a human person is more than anything else. And they were always very good to me. And I must say, I owe them my life, my living, not my life, my life, because they treated me wonderfully, and I treated them.
Thank you very much.